Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the VisionVest Live conference call series. Your host today is Mr. Arnold Machuel. Please go ahead, Mr. Machuel.
Thank you, operator, and also thank you to all of our listeners as well. Today is Wednesday, November the 18th, 2015. Good afternoon, and welcome to our VisionVest Live Dial and Discover conference call series, your backstage pass into the minds of the money managers. My name is Arnold Machuel. I'll be your host today. In today's call, we'll be reviewing what went on in the past quarter, and we'll also hear some thoughts from one of the management firms within the Harmony platform of funds. Please note that this call is being recorded, and there'll be a playback available on our website if you need to rehear it or want to forward it on to our friend. The third quarter of 2015, frankly, was quite a poor one as far as investment markets were concerned. Looking at just some of the Canadian market and economic highlights, the Canadian equity market dropped 7.86%, and that's measured as by the S&P TSX index. Our GDP contracted 0.5% in the previous quarter, and our 10-year Canadian Treasury yields actually fell. So interest rates fell yet again. I don't know how many more times you're going to hear me say that. This probably will be the last one, and we'll be talking about that later on with our guest today. So interest, 10-year Canadian Treasury yields started the quarter at 1.68%. They ended at the end of September at 1.43, so a 25 basis point drop. U.S. markets were a little bit better, but really just in Canadian dollar terms, and again, we'll touch on that in a few minutes, but the U.S. equity market in Canadian dollar terms actually was positive in the third quarter, with the S&P 500 index going up by 0.47%. Their GDP was actually positive in the second quarter of the year at a 3.9% increase, and they managed to add 221,000 non-farm jobs during the month of August, which was a bit of a drop from the previous month where it was 223,000, but still significant increases and positive moving forward. Overseas market were also marginally negative, with the MSCI EFI index dropping 0.36%. Now, something I don't normally talk about in these calls, but I do want to touch on today, is market volatility and a measurement called the VIX. It's a measurement that's been going on for about 20 years now of implied volatility in the markets, or expected volatility in the markets. And the historic long-term average of the VIX is just under 20, a number just under 21. And the last few years, it's been well below that. And in this past quarter, it actually jumped back up in the range from 22 to 32. Really, all that implies, what that tells us, is that volatility was way below average up until this past quarter, and it came back to, really just came back to normal, or just slightly above normal in this past quarter. And so that's one of the reasons that we've seen a bit more negativity, but it's normal. And that's really the thing I want to point out about that, is the kind of volatility that we're seeing right now really is just bringing us back to normal after many, many years of it just not being very volatile. Now, I mentioned that the currency, the U.S. market was positive in Canadian dollar terms. Now, that actually had an effect across the board in all markets in the neighborhood of about 6, almost as high as 7% in some regions. For example, in U.S. dollar-denominated terms, the S&P 500 actually fell 6.44%. And yet here in Canadian dollar terms, it grew by 0.47%. So this has been a continuing theme the last few quarters, or the last few years, actually. We have seen increases in Canadian dollar-denominated returns. Markets not being really all that good, but the currency has really helped us out. It's been a tailwind for us, and that continues to be the case. And frankly, we believe that will continue to be the case. Interest rates around the globe continue to fall. Again, this is quite a surprise that they continue to fall. Here in Canada, as I said, from about 1.7 to 1.4. Greece was the biggest drop, going from 15.4% down to 8.3%. Now, that's still a long ways. It's much higher from the developed nations where they're in the 1 to 2% range. So there's still a fair bit that Greece can drop, but basically it has almost halved in light of the concerns about Greece leaving the EU being diminished dramatically. And so, again, we expect that may continue. Now, we asked a few fund managers what their thoughts were on the Canadian equities, fixed income, and the dollar. And I'll just have a couple of quotes for you here. We asked Connor Clark and Lund that question, and their answer was that we believe there are enough positive factors at play to allow equity markets to continue to advance, albeit only modestly and with the odd minor correction. Now, they are talking mostly Canadian equities there. But they also say within equities, we have a positive bias towards European equities, especially versus their North American counterparts, especially Canada, given our cautious view of the Canadian economy. So a lot of caution there, particularly about Canada. And then when we asked about equity valuations, one quote from C.S. McKee, a U.S. equity manager, was that the equity valuations actually continue to be high on a historical basis, but with low interest rates, we view current valuations as fairly valued. When global rates start to rise, we'll see valuations moving higher. So with all that, what do we see going forward? We believe that equity market volatility is going to remain elevated back to this normalized or slightly above normalized level. We do believe that interest rates will ultimately rise, and again, we're going to listen, we're going to hear from our speaker shortly on that subject as well. But we believe that rise will lead to pain in many types of fixed income, but that there are opportunities in some of those areas. And in Canada, we believe that we'll really just see a modest pace of economic growth, and that that plus falling oil prices are actually going to be a drag on the Canadian economy. Now, what did all that mean in the last quarter to your investment portfolios? I'll just pick two broad ones to give you a sense. If we look at the Harmony Balanced Portfolio, the embedded series in the past quarter, so the 3 months ending September 30th, they saw a drop of 2.5%. But put that in the context of year-to-date, those same portfolios year-to-date actually have still managed to earn 0.8%. So they went up, they came back down a bit, but they're still net positive for the year. Similarly, the Harmony Maximum Growth Portfolio, again, the embedded series, now that's a portfolio with little or no exposure to fixed income. In the past quarter, it actually dropped 4.9%, but again, in that case, the year-to-date return is still 0.3%. So again, indicating, and really it was the first quarter went up, the next couple of quarters it fell back, still positive for the end of the year. So we're going to turn now to the interview part of the call here, and we have on the line David Stonehouse. He's the Vice President and Portfolio Manager of AGF Investments, one of the largest managers within the Harmony pools. Now, David has 20 years' experience managing both fixed income and balanced portfolios. His rigorous and disciplined investment process is a combination of a top-down approach to duration and asset allocation with a bottom-up approach to security selection. Dave's a member of the AGF fixed income team, which has expertise in all major fixed income categories, including high yield, investment grade, sovereign bonds, global convertibles, and both in emerging and developed markets, as well as global currencies. David was previously a director for fixed income and a portfolio manager with Acuity Management. That was until AGF bought them out. And prior to Acuity, David was a senior analyst specializing in Canadian equities at a major pension plan. He received a BSc in Applied Sciences at Queen's University and an MBA in Finance and Accounting from McMaster University, and he's also a CFA charter holder. Welcome, David.
Thanks very much for that wonderful introduction, Arnold.
It's quite the resume you've got there. Very impressive. So, hey, can you tell us, first of all, just sort of, so you're a portfolio manager, you're a vice president. What does that really mean? What do you do there at AGF?
So my primary responsibilities involve managing a few major mandates, the flagship one of which is the AGF Fixed Income Plus Fund, which is also part of the Harmony program. And basically, my day-to-day activities really revolve around that in terms of trying to add value through active management and do better than my peers in the index. And I've also got a couple of other mandates that I'm involved in, too. And then outside of managing the fund in terms of positioning it with respect to sectors or asset classes or what have you, and security selection, I'm also involved in things like marketing, talking to clients such as we're doing right now, and various other administrative and strategic roles in terms of various committees that I'm involved with at AGF and so on and so forth.
Great, great. And I got to say, appreciate you taking the time out of your day. I know you're a busy guy, and really do appreciate you taking the time to speak directly to my clients for this. I know interest rates are always they're always a favorite topic when I'm talking to my clients, and you bond guys or fixed income guys seem to have the better hand. You're smarter when it comes to that stuff than most of the equity guys. So appreciate you taking your time.
Well, thanks very much for the opportunity.
So, maybe I'll let me start off the conversation with asking you just to justify why, you know, in this low interest rate environment, does it still make sense for us to have to hold bonds? Is there any value there?
Yeah, absolutely. There's value there from several perspectives. I guess the most obvious example that may be fairly top of mind and recent for investors is what we saw play out in the third quarter of this year, where equities suffered through a fairly meaningful correction, fairly meaningful decline, and fixed income substantially outperformed equities during the third quarter. So the first and foremost attribute of fixed income is to provide good capital preservation and good downside protection in adverse market scenarios. And that's always going to hold true. So it acts as a great counterweight to the volatility of equities, which you were alluding to earlier, and a good source of portfolio ballast. Over and above that, the second reason why I think fixed income still makes sense is that investors sometimes lose sight of the returns that they're getting from fixed income. So what I mean by that is we can all look back with nostalgia, say 20 years ago, and recognize that yields were in the high single digits, let's say 8-9% or something like that. But at that point in time, inflation was very much higher as well. So your real yield was probably in the 4% range, which was actually slightly above the long-term average going back over a century or so, which generally speaking would be closer to 2 or 3% on a real yield basis, in other words, adjusted for inflation. So to put it in different terms, while you might be making a coupon of 8, because your cost of living is going up by 4, you're really only making 3 on an inflation-adjusted basis, or sorry, 4 on an inflation-adjusted
right.
basis. In the current environment, yields might only be 2 for government bonds, but inflation is between 0 and 1%, depending on how you're measuring it and which country you're looking at, and in some cases even lower. So your real yields are generally running in the 1 to 2% range. Now, that's a little bit below the long-term historical average, and it would indicate that the bond markets are not cheap right now. But when you cast it in that light, it's not nearly as expensive as it might appear at first blush. Or to put it another way, despite low yields, you're still actually on an inflation-adjusted basis making somewhat better returns than it might appear on the surface. And the final aspect I would note with respect to fixed income is that over and above the really conservative, low-yielding, defensive government bonds, there are a host of other sub-asset classes or categories within fixed income that have the potential to add more value. And if those are employed judiciously, you can end up still generating a pretty reasonable return with far lower volatility characteristics. In other words, better risk-adjusted characteristics than, for instance, investing straight in equities. So for the vast majority of investors, we can't really contemplate the concept of putting 100% of our money into equities or something that aggressive. and therefore fixed income will always hold a place in the vast majority of investors' portfolios.
Right, right. So the main thing being the ballast, but you're also saying there is actually some potential return there. Now you look after both a significant portion of the Canadian fixed income, and again, I'm talking about the Harmony portfolios here, and I believe, correct me if I'm wrong on this, 100% of the global fixed income.
Not me directly, but one of the other members of my team is responsible for that one, yes.
Okay. All right. So let's just talk about interest rates a little bit. I remember my dad had a 25-year term, not amortization, 25-year term, fixed mortgage at 4%. Now, I'm an older guy, so this is maybe going back a ways, but it seems to me like maybe rates are a little bit below normal, but what we've seen for the last 20 years was way, way, way above normal. And so with interest rates, it feels to me like we've actually just come back to more normal levels. Again, you know, maybe slightly below, but not way below. Can you just comment on that? How do you see that, where do you see rates going in the next 1, 2, 5 years?
Absolutely. Rates, if you look at them from a very long-term historical perspective, which you were alluding to, not just looking at the last 20 or 30 years, but going back farther in time, a century or several centuries, in fact, which we've done, that would suggest that yields, although they're lower than the historical norm, are not that far out of whack. And it's a good point that you raised. So we're below the long-term average, not extremely so, but we're definitely at the lower end of the long-term range. So we've had a very substantial bull market in bonds going back over more than three decades now, and because we've moved from a level that was actually unprecedentedly high 30 years ago in the early 80s, we enjoyed a tremendous bull market run, more so than we've seen historically. And we are getting towards, because we're at the lower end of the historical range, the prospects for bond returns going forward are necessarily greatly diminished versus what investors were able to achieve over that time frame. But the history of the bond markets would suggest that when we move from a secular decline in yields to a secular rise in yields, which is the bane of bond markets, it tends to take place on a very gradual time frame, and it tends to rise on average at a very muted pace. So in any given year, you could have a pretty rapid rise in interest rates, and in another year, a significant drop in interest rates. But when we move into that phase of sustainably rising yields, the pace of the increase tends to be quite modest. So our expectation is that when we eventually go there, we're looking at a headwind to bond returns of maybe 1 or 2% versus whatever yield or coupon the market is offering, not, say, 5 or 10%. So there are a number of folks who've been fear-mongering or who are quite worried about the prospect of rising interest rates and the damage that could do to fixed income portfolios. But history would suggest that you're not looking at sustainable negative 5 or negative 10% returns. You're probably looking at more like 0, 1, 2% returns if, as and when we enter that rising rate environment, and maybe the odd year going down a few percent, but certainly not disastrous. A bond bear market just does not look like a stock bear market. Now, with respect to the next few years, we actually don't believe that the economics justify entering that rising yield environment on a sustainable basis just yet. We've got very high debt levels globally. They've actually risen a fair amount in the last 7 years since the financial crisis, contrary to some people's expectations that maybe they should have been reduced due to deleveraging and austerity and all that sort of thing. So that high debt level is really constraining growth. And we've seen very low growth rates in most parts of the world, partially the consequence of that debt, and really by extension, the fact that we're not getting the normal sort of credit expansion that you would expect in a recovery following a recession. The financial crisis was fundamentally different than typical recessions, and we still think that we're not out of the woods with respect to that because of the high debt levels. Individuals, in particular, and to a degree corporations, are not willing to borrow as much as historically they would have in a recovery phase with very low interest rates to try and stimulate that borrowing. And financial institutions, the banks, are not as willing to lend as they would have been before because a lot of their loans turned sour during the crisis and because there's far more regulatory scrutiny that's preventing them from getting aggressive with lending. So we just don't see a lot of economic activity, and typically bond yields mirror or track to a fair degree economic growth rates. So when we look at a low growth rate, a low inflation rate, a high debt level, in fact, historically high, we believe that we're still mired in a low interest rate environment for a prolonged period of time. And our expectation is over the next number of years, we're still likely to be broadly range bound, and we wouldn't rule out the possibility that yields still can potentially move lower in the next coming number of years. Especially in North America, we're fortunate, even though it might not appear so on the surface, in that Canada and U.S. have among the highest government bond yields in the Western world, in the developed market world, meaningfully higher than Japan and Europe. So they still look relatively attractive.
Yeah, well, that is interesting. Yeah, when you think about it on a global basis. So you see interest rates maybe rising, but not dramatically, by and large being low for long, and remaining that way for 5 years, if we were to pick a year?
I think that it will be a multi-year process, and it's difficult at this point to project how far out that might last, but it's certainly not, in our view, just a year or two. It will be much longer than that. We think that we're probably broadly range-bound, but as I mentioned, we could still see, for instance, U.S. 10-year Treasury yields, which are currently around 2.3%, dropping to 1.0%, which would be a fresh new low at some point in time in the coming half dozen years, just because we haven't had a major setback in the economy in the last half dozen years. And eventually we will get a recession again. Canadian yields should follow along. In fact, in some respects, we look like our yields can go lower, and they've been somewhat lower in the last few years than American yields for a host of reasons, softer economic growth and yet lower debt levels, which means from a credit perspective, we look a little bit more solid than the U.S. So a nice backdrop for Canadian yields to stay low as well. I think when we get cyclical rises in yields, such as we experienced in 2009 and 2013, we're probably only looking at something on the order of 100 and something basis points or 1.something%. So from the lows of last year, maybe we can get back up towards, I would say, a high water mark around 3% on 10-year yields. That's probably as bad as it gets, and I'm not even sure if we get that far. It probably represents a good investment opportunity. As you alluded to in your preliminary remarks, a backup in yields to that level is going to start to put strains on the economy and the capital markets, especially with debt levels so high as borrowing costs commensurately rise. And that should bode well for bond yields to turn back down again, just because the odds of recession will have risen quite substantially, and yields tend to decline in a recessionary environment.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Okay. Well, so is the Fed going to raise rates next month?
The odds right now in the marketplace, for what they're worth, are about two-thirds. So the likelihood of a rise in rates is being priced into a greater extent than we've seen for quite some period of time now, several years. If you look at the economic data, there's a couple of different ways that you can evaluate what's going on in the States. Their core mandates are unemployment and inflation. And from an unemployment perspective, unequivocally, things have improved enough, even though there are pockets of challenge in the unemployment data that the Fed is justified in raising rates. We haven't seen a lot of wage growth. We haven't seen a lot of hiring in the younger cohorts, the 20-somethings to even up to the 40-somethings. We still see too much part-time employment and stuff like that. So the economic data from an employment perspective are far from perfect, but with the unemployment rate down at around 5% in the U.S., there's certainly enough clearance for the Fed to raise rates. On the other hand, inflation remains much below the objective that they have of 2% level, in part in recent times because we've seen commodity prices led by oil decline so much in the last year or two. So we expect to see somewhat of a rebound in inflation over the next year, but they're still below the target that they would want. So they're in a peculiar situation of saying economically, the growth rate is anemic enough and the data are soft enough that if they were already at a point where interest rates were, say, 2 or 3% instead of zero, they probably wouldn't want to raise interest rates right now. The economy is not in danger of overheating or anything like that. However, by the same token, because you're getting, let's say, 2.25% GDP growth on average over the last half dozen years, which the Fed now believes is what the potential growth rate is, and you're close to 7 years removed from the last recession, the question is, why the heck are you still at a zero, let's call it emergency policy rate? There's no real justification for that. So based on economic growth, you probably wouldn't want to hike, but based on no need for emergency and the fact that you're still down at zero, you do want to hike. And that's the quandary that they find themselves in. It's ironic that economic data are generally about the same as they were 3 years ago, and 3 years ago is when they started their last round of quantitative easing. The only exception to that being a lower unemployment rate. So it's a peculiar situation that they find themselves in. And the last couple of meetings, the tiebreaker for them was an unofficial third mandate that they have, which is with respect to financial stability. And it's difficult to say exactly what stayed their hand. They kind of alluded to capital market turmoil a little bit, but they've also talked about the fact that they're okay with the idea of a correction in the capital markets. They also alluded to global developments and the fact that there was turmoil surrounding the Chinese currency easing or loosening adjustment in August really sideswiped the capital markets and emerging markets in particular, and so they did allude to global developments as having stayed their hand. However, they've been fairly explicit about the fact that a rate hike possibility is very much on the table for December, and the question that I think most should be asking them or thinking about ourselves is, if you can't raise rates now, when the capital markets have, you know, the stock market's basically tripled in the last half dozen years, economic growth has been so-so for the last half dozen years, and you're far removed from the last recession, and you've got a number of metrics that are in a reasonable place, led by employment, then exactly when are you going to hike? If you miss your window now and things get worse, you might find that you don't hike at all. So with all these considerations, I think the odds are good that they do go, but the challenge for them is whether they get spooked by something again as they appeared to in September. Now, assuming that they go, and regardless of whether they do or not, the second question is how fast do they raise rates? In the previous cycle from 2004 to 2006, they raised rates every single meeting a quarter point, which worked out to 2% a year over a couple of years. And that will definitely not happen this time. They're talking a very gradual pace. Their own internal projections would suggest they're going to raise roughly 2 out of every 3 meetings, whereas the market anticipates that they're only going to raise probably 2 or 3 times a year, which would be less than 1 every 2 meetings. I suspect that the market's closer to having this right just because there's still too much softness in the economy. And the Fed has, in essence, already tightened a fair amount in a couple of ways over the last couple of years. First, they eliminated quantitative easing, so they tapered that program in 2014. And second, we've seen the trade-weighted dollar rise 20% over the last year or two. Mm-hmm. And that acts as a brake on the U.S. economy as well. So from my perspective, there's actually already been a fair amount of tightening, but I still think it makes a ton of sense for them to try and get off zero. and at least move modestly. That's what Canada was able to do 5 years ago in 2010 and move from essentially zero. We were at a quarter point up to a 1% level. And if he'd been able to, Governor Carney would have tried to go to 2. I think that's the plan for the Fed right now and for Janet Yellen.
Yeah, well, and that's going to have a continued effect on the U.S. dollar as well. So, yeah, that we'll see what happens in December. That will, but I see what you're saying. In fact, right now it seems like all the bets are that they are going to be increasing that rate marginally in December. So we'll see what happens. Well, final question for you, David. Recent very sad events in France, in Paris. How, if any, is that going to affect interest rates around the globe?
From my perspective, the impact of that should be broadly immaterial. Obviously, it's a tragic circumstance, so the human impact is very substantial. But the I guess if you think about it dispassionately from a capital market perspective, we just don't see a material impact in yields. And we've already seen the markets in the last few days not really move very substantially. Yields in Europe have dropped by perhaps 10 basis points on the 10-year, which is not that consequential. And we've had enough unfortunate examples over the last 15 years of terrorist activity and market reactions to them to have established a template for how markets likely trade. And historically, we've seen a knee-jerk reaction sell-off in the capital markets and a flight to quality, meaning bonds, which would drive down yields. But that's tended to reverse shortly thereafter, and the effect overall has been transient. Or transitory. I think that that's exactly what we're seeing play out again this time. I think that there's a great degree of resilience to Western economies in the face of these horrible acts. And generally what we see is that the likes of consumer spending and economic activity hold up remarkably well in the face of these actions. France is a little bit different in that it's very much a tourist-oriented economy. That's one of the largest sectors. It's actually the number one tourist destination in the world. And there's bound to be a little bit of an adverse effect from that perspective. So at the margin, I would anticipate that we see a little bit of softness in GDP, but certainly not a substantial amount. I don't think it's going to precipitate a recession in and of itself. And we're also entering winter months when tourist activity in France is going to be somewhat lower anyway. So the upshot of it all is that we just do not anticipate the after effects of these events to be very material to the capital markets, including bond yields.
Right. Okay. Well, thank you again, David, for taking the time out of your busy schedule to chat with me. I guess if I can summarize what your big picture saying is, don't give up on bonds. There may still be a bit of return there, but we definitely need them for ballast.
Yeah, absolutely. It's not going to be easy going forward, but I don't think you want to abandon the asset class wholesale either.
Yeah, well, I agree with you. Well, thanks again to our listeners. We hope you've enjoyed our call today. If there's something you'd like to discuss with me personally, give my office a shout at 604-542-2818. If there's something you missed in this call or and need to rehear it again, if you know somebody who couldn't listen in live and may want to hear the call, a playback will be available shortly on our website at visionvest.ca. If you received an invitation to the call by email, you'll get playback details sent to you shortly. Alternately, you can call my office and a playback number will be given to you. Our next call is scheduled for Wednesday, February the 10th, 2016. Invitations with details will be sent out to you closer to the date as long as we have your email address on file and are aware of your interest. This has been a VisionVest Dial and Discover conference call brought to you by Arnold Machel, VisionVest Financial Planning and Services, and IPC Investment Corporation. As usual, any returns quoted assume funds are held for the entire period with all dividends reinvested. Commissions, trailing commissions, management fees, and expenses all may be associated with mutual fund investments. Please read the prospectus before investing. Mutual funds aren't guaranteed. Their values change frequently, and past performance may not be repeated. Thanks again for listening.